This is a Pod Dealers Network podcast.
What is TWS podcast episode, whatever? Who cares at this point?
The rant of the vindicated.
It's my podcast. I do what I want to.
People, listen.
Word, is it still alive?
It's not working for me, Rich. We're going to keep going.
I know I changed my voice at work.
Bars on the radio.
What is TWS podcast?
One's ready. I feel like the end is staring at my watch and I'm feeling so new school.
Suicide attempts, how many tries to take?
From New York, where black music was modernized, J Live, worldwide and civilized, always energized, all rights reserved and recognized, all rhymes supersized and come with fries for the fat shit. Stacked with fact backed opinions, pinpoint accurate reflections, timeless selections for your listening pleasure. Where rhymes need the bars, minutes or miles can measure.
I wish I could continue that verse because that is J Live, one of my favorite rappers that I almost forgot about, but I had to start with that one anyway. Welcome to another episode of the What Is TWS podcast. As always, I'm your boy J. Dot Flam, representing the White Pants Society. And I'm going to start, like I always do, by thanking you first and foremost for taking whatever time out of your day to come and chill with me, listen to my random ramblings, whatever it is I do here. You could be anywhere else in the world, but you're here with me, and that does mean the world to me. I've been going through music that I haven't listened to in a long time. Now that, you know, I'm back on Opulence Radio. If you haven't downloaded the app, do that now. But I'm back on Opulence. I got the Excuse Me As I Kiss the Sky experience, and I get to play what I like. So I've been going through music that I forgot about. And J Live is definitely one of those artists. Probably going to be doing a lot of J Live on Kiss the Sky coming up here soon because I feel like I need to highlight that one. But that's a song called MC from J Live. I can't remember the name of that album right now. Forgive me. But yeah, it's dope music. I just feel like playing some dope music. It has nothing to do with the episode. But let's get into the episode today. We got to start the way we always start. We got to do the Chef Elise Report.
Out of Pepe.
Yes, sir, I am. Very proud to be. We had our visit this weekend. And she's just an interesting little person. And sometimes I gotta give her some grace because I'm just so used to her doing crazy stuff that I assume that the things that she does is crazy. But anyway, I picked her up, you know, on Friday. It was like pajama day at school. So she was in her PJs when I got her from school. And we went and we got some smoothies and wraps and stuff because that's something she likes to do. So we did that. And then we headed off to the grocery store. And so I pull up to the grocery store. Like, she's such a creature of habit that if you do anything that's like not the norm, and I'm pretty consistent with what I do, you know, I park in the same places when I go spaces, you know, I go places, you know, I take the same routes, that kind of thing. And I think I got to the grocery store and I wanted to park in the space that I normally park. And I got over there and realized all those spaces were taken up. So I ended up having to, you know, ride behind the grocery store and come out on the other side and find a spot. And in doing that, like, she didn't realize we were at the grocery store that we go to every time I pick her up. So when she finally did realize that that's where we were, she went through this whole thing. She was like, Dad, what we shouldn't do is turn the house into a sushi restaurant. And I was like, okay, no idea where this is coming from. But cool, I didn't plan on doing it. So you say we shouldn't do it. I think we're both on the same page. And then it flipped to, well, I think we could turn your room into a sushi restaurant. It's like, again, I'm not sure how we got here, but we here, whatever. If that's what's on your mind, I'm not saying we're going to do it, but I acknowledge the statement. Let's keep going. Now we in the grocery store and like everything, you know, in her mind, we are shopping to set up something in the house as a sushi restaurant. We looking for stuff, whatever, whatever. And she keeps saying, so what she kept saying to me is like, we're going to do a sushi restaurant and I'm going to be the head chef. And then she was saying something. I thought she was being racist because she kept saying this. She's going to be, we're going to open this sushi restaurant. She's going to be the head chef. And every time she said head chef, what I heard her saying was like Mei Ling or something like that. Like she just kept saying, I'm going to be the head chef, Mei Ling. Like that's what I'm hearing. And she kept saying it and I'm getting like embarrassed. I'm like, if anybody hears this, my little girl, like doing this racist stuff because she swears she's a fan of Asian culture, as she calls it. And I'm getting worried. And then it wasn't until maybe like the eighth or ninth time she said it. And trust me, like she said it over and over again, just head chef, Mei Ling. And I'm like, oh God. Yeah, I finally realized she wasn't saying that. She was saying wee wee. I guess, I don't know if she's been watching some sort of French cooking thing or whatever, but she's talking about a sushi restaurant, and she kept saying, I'm going to be the head chef, wee wee. And it was such a relief. You know, it's still kind of weird. I don't know where she gets these things from. It's still very weird, but it was a little bit of a relief. And my daughter's not as racist as I thought she was. But she's definitely not as racist as people in St. Louis. If you ever find out what they call Chinese restaurants, it's crazy. Ask somebody if you want to know. But other than that, I ended up having to buy some sushi so that she could like bring it to the table when I got home and pretend like she was serving me at a sushi restaurant. And buying like grocery store sushi is not high on my list of things that I like doing, but anything for my little girl. So we had that experience. Other than that, it was a good weekend. I can't say I had to play. She's invented a board game called Catch the Villain or something like that. It's you're going to listen to this at some point, Chef Elise, and I want you to know that was like the worst game of all time. It was rigged. There was too many rules. It's crazy rules with magic magnifying glasses and teleportation pads and all kinds of stuff. You didn't roll dice to move. You had to pick from these set of cards, and it was only three cards. And one of them was a villain. If you got the villain, you lost your turn. And so I pretty much knew when the game started who was going to win, because every three times I was going to not be able to move. And whatever. It's just the things you do as a dad to make your kids feel happy. That's my little girl. I love her to death. But when you hear this, Elise, understand that was a sacrifice. I'm highly competitive and I was playing a game I couldn't win and had to pretend like I was having fun, even though I hated it. But I love you, little girl. I love you to death. And that's the Chef Elise report.
Out of Pepe.
And as much as I complain about it, I am proud to be. But before we get into what the episode is going to be, got a shout out to sponsor for this week's episodes, VitaZen Wellness, a supplement company. They got their mushroom-based supplements, all the things you need to get right. They got your ginkgo biloba. They got your reishi. They got your cordyceps. They got your ashwagandha, which for me is very good for anxiety, helps with those issues. What else do they got? They got everything. But, you know, if you need to get your get right, and you do, hit up VitaZen Wellness, because VitaZen Wellness works. It's VitaZen Wellness.shopfront.live. VitaZen Wellness. VitaZen Wellness works. Support black businesses. But with that being said, let's get into what this episode is going to be. I've actually received quite a few questions recently. And if you want to get your question answered on the show, hit up whatistws.com/AMA for Ask Me Anything. You can send me a question anonymously. I don't get any information on who you are other than your IP address. And I'm not really doing the work to try to track down who you are on that level. I do IC, but not like that. But you can send me a question anonymously, and I guarantee you I answer all of them. Candidly, whatever. And it doesn't have to be about me. You can just ask me a question about whatever. I got the answers. I promise you. But this week, I decided to do this question because I haven't done much on the show like sobriety or recovery related. And I do think that's something that people maybe need to hear about or maybe have some interest in. And it's definitely one of the topics I'm passionate about. And I think I could speak for 20 minutes or however long I'm going to rant about this on the show. So this week's question, let me find it. Yes. Was there one specific thing that led you to make the decision to stop drinking? If so, what was it? Two questions in one. I'll allow it. It's cool. Was there one specific thing? I don't know. I think the only way for me to answer this question is to just kind of take you down that journey of what finally made me make the decision to stop drinking and stay stopped. Because I had made the decision to stop drinking several times. I think before I moved to Texas really because my drinking had gotten out of control. And I had really reached a suicidal place. And my ex-wife, which was my girlfriend at the time, you know, pretty much said, hey, you know, sell your condo, you know, move to Texas. You know, I'll take care of you. You know, we'll get this together. And so I did about a year and a half white knuckling it, like not really going to any kind of treatment or, you know, being in any kind of program, just sure willpower. Like, you know, a year and a half I did, you know, just pure willpower. I'm not going to drink. I'm not drinking. And that lasted until it didn't last. You know, once I started working and I felt like I was back in a good place, I came up with all these rules. I had rules like I wasn't going to drink hard liquor. I was only going to drink beer, you know, occasionally or something like that. And then it was, you know, I wouldn't drink alone. I would only drink after work or at home. You know, that I had all these rules, and one by one, I started breaking those rules. You know, yeah, okay, I'll have a beer and a shot. So the hard liquor thing, you know, went out the window. There was a bar across the street from the job that I got. And so I'd leave work, go across the street, you know, get a beer and a shot, maybe two shots, two beers, whatever it was. And then I was going there at lunch. So it slowly became all the rules that I had, you know, I started breaking, and things, you know, spiral right back to, you know, where they were before. I heard in the program somewhere that rock bottom is when bad things happen faster than you can lower your standards. And that definitely was true for me. It was like, you know, wherever I was in the I'm not going to do this, or at least this hasn't happened, whenever that thing did happen, you know, I just would move the goalposts somewhere further down the line. Like, well, at least this hasn't happened. You know, I know it happened with, you know, I don't drink at work. And then I was drinking at work. I've never been arrested. I got arrested. Well, I've never lost a job. I lost a job. Like, you know, it was that progression definitely happened. But I did the white knuckling thing for a year and a half, and then, you know, fell back into what I was doing. I did end up getting a DUI, got arrested, ended up going to jail for a weekend. I ain't gonna make it seem like I went to jail for an extended period of time. and I think that damaged my marriage to the point, or got my wife to the point where she didn't feel secure or comfortable in the relationship, so she left for a period of time. So I went to an inpatient or outpatient program to try to prove to her that I was, you know, I was taking the sobriety thing seriously and I was getting the help that I needed. And I did well in that. You know, she came to a couple of the classes that I was taking for the outpatient program, and, you know, I had convinced myself, so I don't want to make it seem like I was lying, because I had convinced myself, and because I had convinced myself, I had convinced the people in the program that I was very serious about this, and how much I loved my wife, and how much I wanted my marriage to work. And when she would come to the classes and they would meet her, you know, they would echo all of these things. So everything sounded great. And she ended up, you know, coming back home. I think that time around, I only made it 4 months. You know, I was going to meetings. I was doing all the things I was supposed to do, you know, to keep up appearances. But slowly things started to slip. You know, it went from, you know, I was going to a certain number of meetings a week because the program, the outpatient program, required it. And then I graduated from that, and I was still going to meetings, but not as many as I had been, you know, when it was by force. And then, you know, it would be an afternoon or so where I'm too tired, or, you know, work was crazy. And then, you know, slowly stop going to meetings, and now you're not going to meetings at all. And then I remember a friend of mine here had moved to Dallas, and, you know, some buddies, we were going to take a trip up there to visit him in Dallas. And I think from the time we made the decision that we were taking a trip to Dallas, I had made the decision in my mind that when I got to Dallas, I was going to drink. And that's exactly what I did. And spiraled right back into, you know, what I was doing. So I'm telling the story again to try to pinpoint what is the one thing that made me make the decision to stop drinking. I spiraled back after this second attempt at, you know, trying not to do it. You know, things got really bad. Wife left again. I ended up staying with a friend. You know, I got so messed up that I lost another job. I got really sick, had to be hospitalized. You know, I had already not been to work for a couple of days before I got hospitalized. And then while I was in the hospital, you know, not communicating with anybody, you know, they had decided to part ways with me. So I came home to really not much, you know, had my savings or whatever, but my wife was leaving. She's selling off everything, you know, that we have. And a friend of mine said, you know, I could come stay with him. And, you know, I went ahead and took him up on that offer because I really didn't have any other options. But that was a horrible situation for me. And ended up leaving there and moving to an extended stay hotel. In the process, I got a great job. I was an information systems engineer for Whole Foods. I had the title of engineer. I was working for a great company, Whole Foods. It at least was a great company. I don't know what they're like now that, you know, Amazon has purchased them. But because I fuck Amazon, I'll talk about that another day, but fuck Amazon. I just want to repeat that again. But had a great job, but I was definitely going through some imposter syndrome. I thought, you know, I didn't deserve this job. And, you know, maybe a lot of it probably had to do with the drinking and who I really was. The fact that I knew people didn't know who I really was. They didn't know what I was doing when I left there and went back to that hotel room, you know, by myself. And it got really bad, like really, really bad, to the point where, you know, there would be mornings where I was just sick and like throwing up and just, you know, figuring out a way to get well enough to leave the house to go to work. I was Ubering back and forth to work because I didn't have a car. I'm living in this hotel and, I'd be in the Uber on the way home from work on an app, you know, ordering whatever drink I needed at the house so they could be there by the time I got, you know, to the hotel. And I realized, you know, how much I was scrolling through the app trying to find, you know, something that wasn't turning my stomach just to look at it. It had gotten that bad where, you know, and this is what somebody asked me a while back, like, if them wanting a drink every day made them an alcoholic, you know, and my response to him was, you know, I can't make that determination for you. I can't tell you what makes you an alcoholic. You have to decide that. But what I can tell you is that for me, I think the point in which I realized I was an alcoholic was not when I wanted to drink every day, but when I really didn't want a drink every day, but I felt like I had to have it. And I remember those moments, you know, in those Ubers, you know, trying to order something or trying to figure out what it was I was going to have to drink for the night because there was no way I could be in there by myself without it. That feeling kind of hit me. I don't want this. I'm looking at this stuff. Most of it, you know, just the thought of some whiskey or the thought of some tequila or vodka, whatever, is already turning my stomach. I'm trying to look for something different, something new that I haven't tried before just to have something. Man, I think that's when I first tried the alcoholic seltzer, which is the worst fucking thing in the world. First of all, it's gross. Like, alcohol in general don't taste good. Alcoholic seltzer is just the dumbest shit I ever heard of. It doesn't taste good. It's horrible. I don't care what fruity flavor you try to add to the water with the alcohol. It fucking sucks. And then why would you take water, something that we need and is good for us, and add a toxin to it and then be like, yeah, this is a new, great, cool-ass product. Like, just either give me the toxin or give me the beneficial liquid. Don't give me the liquid laced with a toxin. Like, that's just dumb. It's just fucking dumb. And a lot of what I was doing was dumb. I was drinking hard liquor and chasing it with Gatorade and stuff, you know, trying not to dehydrate. Like, it was the way your mind can make anything make sense when you wanted to. It's crazy. But we still haven't gotten to why I stopped drinking. Now, I'm figuring it out as I talk, so walk with me. But, it got really bad. And it got to the point where I didn't like who I was. I didn't think I was going to change. Because, again, this was like, you know, I had already done three attempts at what I knew how to do to get myself out of the situation. And it hadn't worked. And I was still leaning on my own intelligence and my own willpower. And it was, you know, I should be strong enough to do this. And if I'm not, there's nobody that can help me. Because who can do this better than I can? You know, I'm just that fucking brilliant. And so I had decided it wasn't going to change. And that I, you know, I didn't want my daughter to see this. I didn't want to live this way anymore. I didn't want my daughter to, you know, have to deal with her dad that was like this. And that, you know, checking out and moving on, you know, would be the most merciful thing I could do for myself and the people around me. People wouldn't have to worry about me anymore, be concerned. I wouldn't be a source of stress. You know, I wouldn't be disappointing jobs and all of these other things. So that was the decision I made. And so, you know, I ended up after an attempt in the hospital on suicide watch. I don't recommend it. You know, they take the doorknobs off the doors. They don't give you trays to eat your food with. You don't get utensils. It's crazy. Like, you can't have nothing. There's a nurse in the room with you 24/7. You got a shower with the door open. They take the shower curtain. Like, don't do it. Don't do it. Just fucking sucks. And when I got, you know, well enough to be released from the hospital, you know, I had a doctor. And again, shouts to Texas for the way they handled my situation. I don't, you know, Texas in terms of, you know, their lawmaking and their policies don't look good. But I can't act like they didn't take very good care of me and provide me with all the resources and opportunities I needed to get well. So, you know, I got to shout out Texas for that. But yeah, the doctors came to me and they said, you know, if we could get you some help, would you take it? And, you know, one, I ain't had no place to stay because I couldn't go back to that hotel. I know the shape I left that hotel room in. I know the shape that I left the hotel in. Like, I was in a hallway. We ain't going to go there. It was bad. So I had nowhere to go. My ex-wife was not letting me stay with her. The dude that I had been living with prior to the hotel, nah, I wasn't doing that either. So it was like, hey, you know, if y'all can set up something for me, I really don't have no choice but to take it. And I went to a few, they call them respite homes. They're not quite, I mean, very close to a homeless shelter, but, you know, geared toward getting you back, you know, on your feet. They got me state provided medical insurance. They got me down I guess they call them prescribers. They're not quite, you know, psychologists or therapists, but they are people who can assess your mental health needs and prescribe you, you know, certain medications. So they got me stable on my medications, helped me get funding to go to a rehab, and, you know, and gave me a place to stay and food to eat during that whole process. And I did that for, you know, a couple months before I finally got a bed in a rehab, and I went to rehab. And I'm still telling the story because throughout all of this, I still had not really made the decision to stop. The idea of not drinking again still was not attractive to me. And it was almost off-putting thinking I can never drink again. Like, that was depressing to think about. And so I was avoiding that question. Even with everything that I had been through and all of it really, you know, stemming from me having a problem drinking, I would be having debates with people about the merits of some of these programs and, you know, these meetings and stuff. And, you know, why is there spirituality included in it, and why this doesn't work, and why this is all bullshit. I still thought I could think my way out of this, and I was going to find a way to find some balance and be able to drink again and be maybe a contributing member of society. I'm in places that are for people that are homeless. I'm homeless and unemployed. That's how I was getting this funding. I could go places and talk to these, you know, caseworkers or whatever, and those were the catchphrases. Homeless, unemployed, I bet. Here's your funding. So I end up in a rehab. I'm in a rehab with, like I said, fed cases and pretrial people. And, you know, I'm in a rehab with, you know, folks that are most of the people there were not there voluntarily. I was one of the few people that were there voluntarily. Most of this stuff was court, you know, demanded. I don't know what the word is, but they got the nudge from the judge, as they call it. And still, even there, the bravado hadn't changed. The ego hadn't changed. I still thought I knew better than everybody else. And but I made it through the program. And so at this point, I'm sober, but I'm sober because I have to be. Because everywhere that I am right now, if I drink, I'm out. I'm on the street. And, you know, I'm not, that was enough of the deterrent to keep me straight. So I, you know, I didn't drink because I really had no other option. I'm in a rehab where they took my lotion because my lotion had some form of alcohol in it. I'm trying to figure out how they thought I was going to distill the alcohol out of the lotion or if I was just going to drink the lotion. I don't know how they figured that was going to work. But these are the places that I'm at. So I'm still not sober by choice. I'm kind of sober by force. And so I get out of the rehab. I end up in a sober home. The Oxford House. Shouts to Oxford House. I appreciate everything that they did for me and the opportunities they gave me. I'm in a house that requires you to go to a certain number of meetings a week. Again, you know, abstaining is absolutely a requirement. You drink there, you out on the street. I'm working at McDonald's because, you know, that was the job I could get. Getting back into IT was going to take too long, and I had bills to pay. My little girl was, you know, in daycare. I got to pay my rent at the sober home. You know, it was a tough time for me. I was eating microwave popcorn and Frosted Flakes because that's all I could afford other than the free meals I got at McDonald's. And even in this state where, you know, I went from being an information systems engineer, making a decent amount of money with a title that I was proud of at a company I was proud to be a part of, to now working at McDonald's. Not saying you can't be proud of working at McDonald's, but it was a fall from grace for me, not being able to afford anything. Couldn't afford to get my hair cut. Like, and if you know me, that's like a death sentence. Like, I can't get my hair cut. I'm out here looking crazy. I'm 38, you know, 39 years old, you know, doing the drive through at McDonald's with these teenagers. Like, I'm the old man working at the McDonald's, and I'm not the old retired man. I'm just the old damn near homeless nigga that's working at McDonald's. I don't want nobody. I'm glad I'm in Texas so that nobody I know is going to, you know, run up on me and order some nuggets. And still, I had not made the decision. Like, I was doing it because it was what I had to do, you know, looking for, you know, my opportunity to get back on my feet, get back to whatever my life used to be. And you know, I couldn't have been certain in those moments that when I got there, I wasn't going to fall back into, you know, into habits. Because I hadn't made that decision. I think what did it for me at some point, and this is why I encourage people to just reach out and get the help and, you know, and go, you know, talk to people and be in these meetings and be in these places. You know, I started because I had to go to meetings to stay in the house that I was living in to, you know, have a roof over my head. And at some point, I started to notice that the people there were happy. And they weren't happy. They weren't happy because they were sober. They were sober because they were happy, if that makes sense. You know, it's not the not drinking that brought them happiness. It was the happiness that they found that kept them from drinking. And I wanted that happiness. I wanted to be happy too. I realized that, you know, my drinking was me running from stuff. I was ordering, you know, that liquor in the Uber on the ride back to that hotel because I couldn't be in that hotel room by myself without it. I would be miserable. I was miserable. I would drive myself crazy in that misery. And so I needed something to numb my thoughts and my feelings, you know, and that's what I was using it for. It was a coping mechanism. And these people no longer needed that coping mechanism because they found a way to live and be happy. And that's what I wanted. And I was lucky enough. I'm an introvert. I don't like people for the most part. And I'm going to these meetings full of people. I'm not talking because I'm not doing that. Just in my mind, I'm not. I need you to sign the paper. And I'm not taking anything away from it. I'm hearing stuff that makes sense to me and works for me, but I'm not talking. I remember sitting outside of the thing because I got there early and I had headphones on, listening to music, looking as unapproachable as I could possibly look because I didn't want to talk to anybody. And these people are very talkative. And this old French man walks up to me and starts talking. And I can't hear anything he's saying because I have headphones in. And he can see that I have headphones in, but he's not. He's continuing to talk. Like I'm going to speak until you acknowledge me. So eventually I take, you know, one of the headphones out. And he just asked, you know, asking me what my name is, you know, what I'm up here for. I mean, you know, small talk. And he says to me, you know, like, I'm in a 12-step meeting. And he says to me, like, you got a sponsor? And I'm like, no. And he's like, all right, you give me 12 weeks, I'll get you through the 12 steps, you in and you out. And I think him putting it to me that way was like, are you doing this or you not? Because I'm telling you, I'll get you through it. 12 weeks, not a whole lot of time. You want to do this or do you not want to do this? And I took him up on his offer. Great dude. Still talk to him to this day. And I haven't looked back. Yeah, I learned how to cope. If there is one thing that made me decide to stop drinking, it was seeing people on the other side that were happy and wanting that happiness, wanting to be in a place where I didn't need to drink. Not that I didn't want to, but I didn't need to. To this day, right now, I can be places where there's alcohol. There was a time where I could, you know, walking past the liquor store, like I could feel like I was on that, Chris Tucker shit or whatever, like, Chris Rock in New Jack City. Like, it be calling me, man. It just be calling me. I could feel like I was walking past liquor stores and like there was a gravitational pull. There was something saying, like, you supposed to be in here. We here. Like, come through. And these days that's gone. I can't say I'm like over the moon happy, but on a daily basis, I have something to be grateful about, be it you guys in this podcast, my daughter, maybe it's my job. Some days it's just the roof over my head and the fact that I got food and I got paper towels and I got, you know, laundry detergent, like whatever I need. I got gas in my car. If I need to go someplace, I can. If I need to wash clothes, I can. If I'm hungry, I can eat. And I'm not cold. There's always something to be grateful for. And when I live in that gratitude and I stay present and I stay in the moment and I'm not worried about what the mistakes that I already made or something that might go wrong in the future, and I realize that right now I have everything that I need, and just be appreciative of that and grateful for that. You know, one of the things that old French man taught me, you know, is that if you believe in God, you know, he can only be with you in the present. God can't be with you in the past. It's already happened. And God can't be with you in your imaginary future, because whatever future you think you know is certain, you're not that smart. You don't know. You don't have the power to control it or make it. So that's a made up place that you're at. And he can't be with you there. The place, and I say he, God can't be with you there. The only place that God can be with you is in the here and now, the right now. And if you stay here with God, you'll be all right. And so that's what I try to do on a daily basis. And that contentment, that happiness, that peace is the thing that keeps me sober. So if there's one thing that made me decide to stop drinking, it was seeing that it was possible to be happy, and I wanted to be happy. So long-ass answer to a short question, but it was two questions in one. So I feel justified. I had to give you the thing and the why. So that's what the why took a half an hour. It's not my fault. It is what it is. But with that being said, if you made it this far, you're the real MVP, and I do appreciate you. Please check out the merch store, whatistws.com/store. Get your merch, hoodies, t-shirts. I got neck gaiters, everything you need for the winter and COVID and whatever. We got it. Holla at me. Help me send Chef Elise to Disney World, Disneyland. I haven't figured out which one is which. But yeah, whatistws.com/store. And then again, shouts to Opulence Radio. I am loving the opportunity to share the music that I love with the people that I love. And that's you guys. And so yeah, the Kiss the Sky experience. Used to call it the Kiss the Sky Hour, but now I got 2 hours. So it's a whole experience. It's a whole vibe. That is Friday nights, 8 to 10 p.m. Eastern time. They do replays during the week. I can't think of when that time is, so I can't tell you, but just tune in at some point. And you can't be too far away from a J. Dot Flan appearance. And then I'm also on the All on the Table happy hour. That's Tuesday nights, 8 to 10 p.m. Eastern time. And we review underground music and just have dope hip hop conversations. So, you know, if you hear the kind of person that I am here and you want to see my opinions on music or the music that I like, you can check out those shows. I make cameos other places, but support black businesses, Opulence Radio. Download the app if you haven't yet. I don't know what you're waiting on. But I appreciate y'all. You know, we'll do this again. But until we speak again, be safe, be easy, be the light. And know this, if you know nothing else, there is always, 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 always something to be grateful for. And I love you. Holla.
Last call for alcohol. Yeah. If this is it, like if this is the last joint, if this is the last hurrah, it's the last call for alcohol, baby. I gotta say, whether you knew it or not, it's pretty much at the finest bar establishment, the finest spirits and libations y'all could have had, baby. You might realize it now, you might have realized it back then. You might realize it later.
Love.